Hi, and welcome to Crash Course Catholicism, a podcast about Catholic teaching and why it makes sense. I'm your host, Caitlin West. Hey friends, welcome to this episode on spiritual warfare. This episode has come about in response to a request from a listener who was recently received into the church and reached out and was like, hey, this is really hard and I feel like I'm under attack. What does the church teach us about fighting spiritual battles? So thank you to the people who have reached out with requests and questions. It really helps me to know what's useful to you and what you need. And I've added lots of things to my list of upcoming episodes, which is very exciting. Speaking of reaching out, FYI, I discovered a few days ago that the Gmail account for this podcast has been sending some people's emails to spam and then deleting them. If you are someone who has gotten in touch via email and you never heard back, that is almost certainly what has happened. I am sorry about that, and feel free to email me again if you like, because I will be checking that spam folder from now on. Okay. So let's talk about spiritual warfare. Now that term, spiritual warfare, might sound kind of dramatic and over the top. We might think of, you know, stories of the saints where the devil has attacked them in a really sort of tangible way. But actually what we're talking about when we use that term is something that is very normal and that all of us experience. Every person's life is a journey to heaven, and the devil does not want us to succeed in that journey. He literally wages a war against each of us. He does everything that he can to try to stop us from getting to heaven. So in today's episode, we're going to have a look at some of the tactics that the devil uses to try to pull us away from our goal, as well as some of the tools that are available to us to fight those temptations. And it's really good for us to be reminded that the devil is real. And he wants us to go to hell. And it sounds really intense, but it's true. It's so easy to get complacent and to kind of coast along and think, oh, well, you know, I'm doing pretty well. And we can forget that we actually have to fight spiritual battles to get to heaven. Now, this is a topic that has been written on extensively by saints and spiritual writers in the church. So this episode and the next one, they're really going to be a crash course, like truly a crash course in spiritual warfare. So for anyone who's interested, I'm going to include a bunch of resources for further reading in the show notes, because there is so much useful material out there. Things like The Screwtape Letters, one of the best books ever, the writings of St. Teresa of Avila and St. John of the Cross and Thomas Merton. I've drawn from all of those people in these two episodes, but I really recommend having a look at their stuff as well. So, every single person who is on that path to heaven experiences spiritual battles along the way. Now, the exact tactics that the devil uses in these battles will, of course, vary from person to person because everyone is different and we're all at different stages in our spiritual life. However, luckily for us, the devil has some pretty limited and predictable methods that we see coming up again and again. So we're able to learn what they are and keep an eye out for them. Basically, broadly speaking, the devil wants to keep us away from prayer, from true, deep prayer. He wants to keep us away from the sacraments. He wants us to focus on this world and take our eyes off heaven. He wants to weaken our love for God and destroy our relationship with him. And we have many, many weapons available at our disposal to fight those battles. So we're going to go through some of them today and some of them in our next episode. But just to flag at the outset, the best weapons available to us are precisely those things that the devil is trying to keep us away from, namely prayer, the sacraments, and mortification or embracing the cross. So prayer, the sacraments, and mortification. So that's a very broad summary of spiritual warfare, and we could easily just leave it there, but it's worth taking a closer look because, as we just said, the devil uses different tactics based on where someone is at in their spiritual journey. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go through the different stages of spiritual growth and think about the common challenges that we might face at each stage. Pretty much since the earliest years of Christianity, the Church Fathers have divided the spiritual life into three broad stages of growth or development: the purgative, the illuminative, and the unitive. So the purgative stage is the stage where we're early in our spiritual journey and we're being purged of all of our attachments to earthly things and to sin, especially mortal sin. The illuminative stage is a stage of much deeper growth in virtue, where we're detached from mortal sin and we're becoming detached even from venial sin, and our love for God is deepening and maturing. The unitive stage, that third and final stage, is where we're basically being perfected in virtue. We're no longer enslaved by sin, and we're beginning to enjoy that total union with God that will be complete once we enter heaven. So we can think of it kind of like climbing a mountain, and at the top of that mountain is like a bright, pure light that casts its rays over everything. And we start at the bottom and we want to climb all the way up to that light. That's like a mashup of like three different images that spiritual writers have used for the spiritual journey. That's the one that we're using today, a big old mountain with a light at the top. Now, when we begin our journey, we are standing at the very bottom of that mountain. So we can still receive the warmth of that light. It's still shining on us, but it's much fainter. It's further away, and we're surrounded by a lot more darkness. So at the beginning of our spiritual journey, we're in the state of grace, but we're also surrounded by temptations, and our relationship with God is less mature, less strong. So maybe we don't do very much mental prayer. Maybe our prayer is a bit sporadic and a bit superficial. Maybe we don't like particularly want to sin, but we are still habitually falling into sin, maybe even serious or mortal sin. We want to love God, but we're not really making full use of the means available to us to get closer to Him. Now, the devil wants to keep us at the foot of the mountain. He really, really wants that. Because think about it. If someone is hovering at the foot of the mountain, they're right on the edge of that darkness. If they stay there for their whole life, it will be so much easier for the devil to just reach out and pluck that person off at the end of their life, to just give them one final push and shove them out into the darkness. So there are a bunch of ways that he tries to keep us there in that first stage of our spiritual journey. Some of the most common ones are, firstly, complacency. In other words, he tries to convince us that we're doing pretty well and that we don't really need to worry too much about our spiritual progress, and we can just kind of keep chilling at the foot of the mountain. Secondly, discouragement, and especially discouragement that leads to despair. Particularly if we're struggling with mortal sin, the devil might say to us, look, you keep falling into sin. You might as well give up because you're never going to overcome these habits. God is sick of seeing you fall over and over. He's sick of forgiving you. It would be easier for everyone if you just walked away from this because it's too hard. And guys, I am just going to flag it right here that that is a lie. It is a lie. It's a lie from the devil that you need to reject immediately and wholeheartedly. God never, ever, ever, ever gets sick of forgiving us. Ever. It doesn't matter how many times we fall. If we get back up again, God will always forgive us. So reject that outright. That is a lie from the devil. Thirdly, we're tempted through fear and anxiety. The devil tries to keep us focused on and worried about earthly things like our jobs, our health, our body image, our social media following, our bank account, our relationship status, the cost of living crisis. Okay, now, some of these things might be genuine sources of concern, and it's okay to be concerned about them, but the devil wants us to hyper-focus on those things, to lose our peace over them, to obsess over them and try to solve them all by ourselves, rather than giving them to God and allowing them to bring us closer to Him. Next, the devil tempts us through distraction. Have you ever had that experience where you sit down to pray And it's like immediately in the first 2 seconds of your prayer, you start thinking about all the little things that you have to do. You're like, oh, I need to hang out my laundry and I need to reply to that text message and I have to look that thing up and I'm hungry. What's in the fridge? Okay, that is the devil trying to stop you from praying. And sometimes we can even get into like a distraction loop, you know, where you get distracted and then you realize that you're distracted and then you start focusing on that and you start thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe I got distracted. I really need to focus more. Why can't I focus? I hate that I get so distracted. Okay, notice how we're now in a loop and we are still distracted. We're not talking to God. This is one of the ways that the devil tries to stop us from going deeper in our conversation with God. He also tries to distract us from the sacraments. So maybe, you know, we're trying to get to Mass a bit more often during the week, but every time we try to get to Mass, something else comes up that feels more important. Or we encounter some small obstacle to getting to confession, for instance, and we just immediately give up. The final temptation that we commonly experience at this stage is being overly focused on other people's sins and faults. Oh man, this one really hit home for me. This is such a huge temptation. Looking around and seeing the faults of other people and becoming upset by them and focusing on them, even when there's nothing that we can do about it. The problem with being overly critical of other people is that it weakens charity. It causes disunity, which is something that the devil loves, and it distracts us from our relationship with God. It makes me think of when I'm driving, I get a little bit of road rage sometimes, and sometimes I am so preoccupied with being annoyed by something that someone else is doing on the road that I'm not paying attention to my own driving, and then I do something wrong. So focusing on other people's faults tends to be unhelpful for everyone. Now, we might hear that and think, well, no, I mean, if someone is doing something wrong, then we need to correct it, right? Like, surely it's good to notice and to point out when someone is in the wrong. That's a great point. And it is true that in some situations, we do need to correct other people's faults. However, there is a difference between noticing that something is wrong, praying about it, and then if it's appropriate, gently correcting that person with charity and then leaving it in God's hands and moving on. Okay, there's a difference between doing that and having like a hypercritical spirit where we're constantly on the lookout for other people's faults, constantly offended by them and allowing ourselves to get angry or bitter or worked up about things that often we can't even do anything about. And sometimes it's not even our job to correct that person, or they're not someone who, you know, we're close to or that we've come into contact with. And so there is no point. It's completely fruitless us getting upset about it. And yet we completely hyper-focus on it. So, all of these are temptations that are aimed at keeping us in a superficial relationship with God. Discouragement, fear and anxiety, distraction, and a hypercritical spirit. So, what are some antidotes to these temptations? Well, aside from prayer, mortification, and the sacraments, which are the big ones, we should also ask God for greater humility. Humility is a really big one at this stage. It is the virtue that will prevent us from getting discouraged, from judging other people, from becoming complacent. We should also ask God to increase our faith, hope, and love. Faith, hope, and love are the three theological virtues that are the foundation of our spiritual growth. So if we want to grow in our spiritual life, we have to be rooted in those three virtues. But of course, we can't earn those virtues. These are the theological virtues. They have to be given to us by God. So we need to ask God for them. Another really important tool at this early stage of our spirit, I mean, it's important throughout our whole spiritual life, but especially in this early stage, is a daily examination of conscience. So sitting down for a few minutes at the end of every day in the presence of God and thinking about how your day went, asking the Holy Spirit to show you where you might have offended him and making a resolution for what you could do better tomorrow. Now, the reason why an examination of conscience is so important at this early stage is because we have a tendency to be complacent, right? And to not actually see where we're at in our spiritual life. So it's really important to get a clear and accurate picture of where we're at so that we can then progress. So as we begin to progress through this purgative stage, we might start to pray more and to pray more deeply, to examine our conscience, to receive the sacraments more regularly. And when we do that, two things tend to happen. First of all, we start to become more aware of our own sinfulness. It's like if you started to climb a mountain and suddenly you realize how unfit you are. Secondly, the devil doubles down in his attacks against us for obvious reasons, right? Like, he is furious that we are making progress. He's furious that we've woken up and that we're actually starting to move towards heaven. And he wants to stop us at all costs. So all of those temptations that we just talked about, they often start to increase, and we can start to feel completely overwhelmed by distractions and discouragement and frustration and anxiety. One of the common temptations that people experience once they start to progress in the spiritual life is the temptation to kind of wallow in shame and guilt, precisely because we've started to feel our weakness. Now, a good antidote to shame is confession, right? To immediately run to God, to say sorry to him, to accept his mercy, to leave our sins and faults in his hands, and to get up and try again, rather than getting bogged down in feelings of guilt. Now, the good news is that along with these increased temptations, we also experience more grace and consolations as we progress through the spiritual life, because we're praying more and we're receiving the sacraments more. So while we might feel overwhelmed, we are also more protected at this stage. We start to really feel that God is with us. We can feel his support, and we're motivated to continue the battle, even though it's difficult. And it's good to remember that you're not alone, right? It is very normal that as we progress through the spiritual life, we feel like we're doing worse, when in reality, actually, the devil has less and less power over us because we're relying on God more. So, as we start to make progress and we start to experience those additional temptations, we're fighting more spiritual battles, there are a few things that we can do to increase our chance of success. One is to just keep showing up. Even when we feel discouraged, even when we're down on ourselves, keep showing up and asking for help and letting God love you. Two, continue to ask for humility. We will not make progress if we don't surrender ourselves to God and allow him to lead us. Three, make a plan for our spiritual life. Commit to certain times of prayer. Commit to going to Mass, maybe on some days during the week, not just on Sundays. Make a plan to go to confession at a regular time. A plan of life is so important because it will make it easier for us to keep showing up even when we don't feel like it. I mean, think about it. Anything that we do in our lives that we want to achieve and achieve well, we make a plan for, right? What's that saying? A goal without a plan is just a wish. It's the same in our spiritual life, right? We need to make a plan for our spiritual life. And lastly, number four, surround yourself with people who can encourage and help you, because you do not have to fight this battle alone, okay? Seek out a community. Seek out people who are on the same journey as you, who can help and support you. So, as we continue, we start to move towards the end of the purgative stage. By the way, there's no like time period for how long it takes to move through each stage of our spiritual life. It's not like, oh, in the first 5 years of being a Christian, you're in the purgative stage and then you graduate to the illuminative stage. No, every person moves through these phases at a different time. And even within, you know, each phase of the spiritual life, we can move forwards and backwards and sideways. So don't take any of this as like a sort of word for word linear. This is exactly how everyone experiences the spiritual life. These are kind of general patterns and tendencies that the great spiritual writers have noticed in human souls, but everyone moves at a different pace. So some people stay in the early stages of their spiritual life for their whole lives, whereas other people convert and then very quickly move straight through the purgative stage to the illuminative stage. Okay, sorry, slight deviation from topic. Let's get back to the main point. So there are a few signs that we are reaching the end of the purgative stage. They include not committing any mortal sins, actively trying to avoid committing even the smallest venial sin, having a deep desire not to sin, and experiencing a powerful fear of offending God. Now, this isn't fear in the sense that we're scared of God, but more that we love him and we're growing in our love for him. And so we hate the idea of hurting him, even in a small way. So as we mature spiritually, we stop trying to avoid sin just because we know that we should and it's bad. We actually want to avoid sin out of love for God. We also start to learn to love the cross. We're willingly doing more mortification. We're embracing those daily sufferings that come our way with joy for love of God. Now, there are a couple of things that happen towards the end of the purgative stage and at the beginning of the illuminative stage. One is that we start to experience periods of spiritual dryness. The other is that we experience more intense sufferings that purify our attachment to earthly things. So let's go through both of those, starting with spiritual dryness. Okay, what does that term mean? Spiritual dryness means that we don't feel God's presence in our lives. We don't feel like God is with us. We might not want to pray. We might find that we're especially distracted in our prayer and that we feel discouraged from praying. Now, you might hear that and think, hang on, Caitlin, that sounds exactly like the feelings that you were describing at the very beginning of this spiritual journey. That is a great point, but there is a key difference here. The discouragement and distraction that arises in the early stages of our spiritual journey is often the result of a lack of virtue. It arises out of a kind of lukewarmness. So maybe we're still very attached to sin. We're not making much effort to pray well or to pray regularly. We're not regularly receiving the sacraments. And so when we sit down to pray, we're just really not feeling it. Okay, that's called lukewarmness. In contrast, spiritual dryness isn't due to anything that we're doing wrong. So maybe at this stage, we're much more detached from sin, we're praying regularly, we're going to confession, we're really doing everything that we can to grow in virtue. And then when we sit down to pray, even though we've left our phone in another room and we really want to put our whole heart and soul into this time of prayer, we just don't receive any tangible sign from God that he's there and he hears us. This is something that many, if not all, of the great saints have experienced. So for instance, Mother Teresa, people often talk about how she went through years and years of spiritual dryness. And this wasn't because she was lukewarm and she wasn't putting in the effort or trying. It was just that she couldn't feel God's presence in her life, no matter how much she prayed, no matter how close she was to him. Now, at times it can be difficult to tell if what we're experiencing is spiritual dryness or lukewarmness. And for that reason, it can be a good thing to bring up in spiritual direction or confession. However, we also don't need to get too hung up on the question, because it can become one of those inward-looking, hyper-focused things that distracts us from God. The main thing is to just keep our eyes on God, keep asking for his help, put in the means, and then leave it in his hands. However, it can be consoling to know that when we're feeling a bit meh in our spiritual life, that isn't necessarily a bad sign. It could be that God is allowing that for our spiritual growth. Now, why would God allow periods of spiritual dryness? Well, because as we go through this purgative stage, God is slowly purifying us of our attachment to pleasure and consolations. Now, that's not to say that he doesn't want us to experience consolation. Of course he does. But he doesn't want us to be attached to those feelings. He is slowly and gently teaching us what it means to love him purely for his own sake, rather than because loving him makes us feel good. In a similar vein, God might also allow greater sufferings in our life at this time. Maybe it's in our relationships with other people or in our work, our family life, our health. God allows us to experience loss and suffering. So maybe someone you love gets sick, or maybe you go through a really hard time in your marriage, or your health gets really bad, or someone at work is making life really hard for you. There's a phrase that has been resounding in my head for the last few weeks. It's from Philippians 3:8. It says, "For his sake, I have suffered the loss of all things." I have been thinking about this so much, and I cannot get over how true it is. This is the experience of every one of us. If we want to get to heaven, then for his sake, we have to suffer the loss of all things. And of course, by this, we don't mean literally like everyone we love has to die and then we lose our job and we end up destitute on the side of the road. I mean, that does happen to some people, but that's not necessarily what it means to suffer the loss of all things. What St. Paul is referring to here is detachment from all things. God allows suffering in order to purify us from our attachment to things. Sometimes it's things that are bad and are leading us away from Him, but sometimes it's things that are good. However, we've made an idol of them, and we need to kind of spiritually lose them or let go of them so that they can end up in their proper place, and then we can love them with a pure heart. Now, this stage, the end of the purgative and the beginning of the illuminative stage, this is a really, really important point in our spiritual growth. It's like a key turning point in the journey to heaven. It's a crossroads. So for any Lord of the Rings fans out there, this is like the point where Sam and Frodo get to Rivendell and they're hanging out with the elves and they think that they've reached the end of their journey and it's all been a big adventure. And they're like, oh, whoa, that was difficult. What a time. Anyway, well, time to go home now. And it's like, nope. Turns out you're only halfway. The ring can't stay here. You're going to have to go to Mordor, to the literal fires of Mount Doom, and you're going to be tired and hungry and you may die. And they have to make a decision. Do they turn back to their comfy life in the Shire, or do they continue knowing that they are going to suffer, but that that suffering will save them? And it would be so easy at this point for them to just yeet out of there and head back home. However, they know that if they do that, then everything that they've done so far will have been for nothing. And the same is true of us. We can get to this point where we've made so much progress. We've been praying and going to Mass and getting closer to God and we're receiving all these consolations and we feel great. And then suddenly the honeymoon phase is over. And we don't feel so on fire anymore, and prayer gets really difficult, and we look around and it feels like everyone else is living their best life and we're suffering. And we realize that when Jesus told us to take up our cross and follow Him, He meant follow Him all the way to Mount Doom, to Calvary, to the death of all things. And we have to make a decision. Do we go back to the comfort of a lukewarm existence? Or do we suffer to the point of spiritual death so as to receive eternal life? St. Teresa of Avila talks about how this is the point where many people turn back, even though they have conquered mortal sin and even venial sin. They've made so much progress, but at this point it just feels too hard. And of course, the devil takes full advantage at this stage. He encourages persecutions and sufferings. He tries to convince us that it's all too hard. He reminds us of all the things of this world that we're missing out on. He tries to get us to feel sorry for ourselves and to feel like it isn't fair that God is allowing us to suffer. He tells us that this is too much. It's unreasonable. No one else is suffering like this. You know, that when God said, take up your cross, He can't have meant this. This is too much suffering. And the only thing that we can do at this point is run to God, cling to the cross, cling to prayer and the sacraments. I think I've used the image before of Harry Potter holding on to Dumbledore while they disapparate and everything around them is dark and horrible and all Harry can do is just hold on tight. It's the same with us. All we can do is keep saying yes to God, hold on to Him and don't let go. Also, guys, bear in mind that the good news is that at this point in our spiritual journey, yes, we're experiencing spiritual dryness and periods of suffering and frustration, and that can be really hard. But at the same time, at this point, we are much closer to God. We have a much deeper, richer, stronger relationship with Him. So while we could make the decision to turn around and walk away, we also have an incentive to stay right where we are. We're like the apostles. We can say to Him, Lord, to whom else should we go? And as well as that, God knows us and He loves us and He will give us consolation when He knows that we need it. So it's not all doom and gloom, even though we do need to be purified of our earthly attachments. Now, one of the other things that the devil does at this point is even when we have said yes to the big sufferings and we're prepared to be purified of all our earthly attachments, the devil tries to get us to hold on to one or two tiny little attachments to the world, things that seem so small that they're almost insignificant. But actually, those little things, they're like anchors that are keeping us attached to worldly things. It's like when the hobbits decide that yes, they are going to go to Mordor. They're going to leave everything behind and say yes to this one big thing. But hey, come on, what about second breakfast? Or what about Bill the Pony? Come on, do I really have to leave him behind as well? And this can be us too. Maybe we're willing to detach ourselves from our career or our health, but we still need to have our cup of tea every morning at 10 a.m. or we won't cope with life. However, in order to truly become saints, we have to let go of everything, even the little things. So, this is where we are going to leave off in this episode. Like the hobbits chilling in Rivendell, we are going to pause at this halfway point. And in our next episode, we're going to talk about the second half of this spiritual journey. And we're also going to go deeper into looking at how we can fight the spiritual battles that the devil wages against us. Awesome. Sick one. Can't wait. Have a fantastic fortnight. I will talk to you soon. Bye.